This week, time may be running out for a social media obsession.
My name is Tiffany Yu. I am joining you from Los Angeles, California, and I'm here because I'm a disability advocate, and TikTok changed my life and so many others within the disability community.
And countries meeting to sign a global treaty to curb plastic pollution failed to reach an agreement.
This conference is about far more than drafting an international treaty. It is about humanity racing to meet an existential challenge.
Join us now on The Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news.
Hello there, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. The clock is literally ticking for social media phenomenon TikTok. The app edged closer to being banned in the United States after it lost an appeal Friday against a law requiring it to divest from its Chinese parent company by January 19th.
TikTok has allowed my dreams that I used to have as a child to come true. I would hate the dreams of all of the other people that use the app that are inspired and educated for those dreams to be crushed.
The short-form video hosting service owned by Chinese internet company ByteDance, which hosts user-submitted videos, has become one of the world's most popular social media platforms.
I'm in class bored, so let's cut my hair. So I don't really know how much to do, so I'm just like that much.
If I make this, I'm going on a diet. Oops, I missed. Let's go buy some tacos.
I'm sick of these teachers. I'm sick of them.
Now, did you handle that stuff in the bathroom?
Earlier this year, White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby said the ban is about security.
From an NSC perspective, there are still national security concerns about the use of TikTok on government devices, and there's been no change to our policy not to allow that.
TikTok, which sued the government over the law in May, has long denied it could be used by Beijing to spy on or manipulate Americans, and they have said they will appeal the ruling to the Supreme Court.
President-elect Donald Trump, who originally tried to ban TikTok in his first term, said on the campaign trail for the recent election that he is now in favor of the app. And according to the Associated Press, enforcing the ban will fall to his administration in January.
All right, let's talk about it with social media expert. Joining us is Seth Schachner, the managing director of Strat Americas.
Seth, thank you so much for being able to join us and talk about this.
Great to be here.
So let's start big picture. This is really complicated, and it's not really just about TikTok, but let's start with TikTok and this ban. What is the real concern, first of all?
I mean, the bigger and broader concern that, you know, has always overlaid, frankly, this entire thing around TikTok is a national, you know, security concern. And it's ultimately about, you know, a bilateral, a rivalry between two global rivals, basically, is essentially what this is about. And, you know, it's, I think, the perception of TikTok in some quarters has, you know, kind of toggled back and forth a bit. Whether that's different administrations or different tactics around how to deal with this entity. And that's sort of been the confusing piece of it to me, more so than the mechanisms and tools that each of the different U.S., you know, presidential administrations have tried to use tactically to deal with it. And I think we're even with today's announcement, I still think it's a rather unclear situation as to what will actually happen come January, basically.
Is it a national security threat? I mean, is this something that is actually a concern, or is this more about the competitiveness? You know, social media in general is very far reaching, and we have a world we're living in we didn't have many years ago that does pose concerns as well.
I think it's both. And I think even people watching this have probably toggled back and forth a little bit But I think if you, my read on this shifted a little bit more when I read about the phone hacking incident that, you know, is unrelated to this, but actually, you know, is in the same ballpark. But I think it is a national security interest. At the same time, you know, TikTok is this massive social network that sits alongside of all the other big ones. It's not as integrated, I think, as some of the others are with each other. That, you know, 180 million Americans, something are using, a billion around the world. And it's part of a big family of apps that's owned ultimately by ByteDance, which, you know, you start getting into ownership in the government and how you define what the public and private sector is, the line over there in China. But I think there are concerns on both ends, for sure.
This is really a bigger issue about the new technology. This is the same kind of issues, in a way, that you face with Facebook and with X and with Telegram. Data collection, really. And the governments around the world's inability to keep up the pace by creating laws that keep that data in check.
There's no question that the law is always behind the technology. And I think, you know, as an American, I think our law or legislation is even further behind, or at least the thinking is, than even other parts, most certainly Europeans, on areas like privacy and data and AI. But I think the real difference here, the first part of your question, is, you know, ByteDance is, you know, has the ability to be controlled by a state actor, that, you know, we're in different ways. Well, we cooperate with them and trade with them. There's certainly competitive aspects as well. And when you have everything from these weather balloons to drones to phone hacking incidents, I think that it isn't just about the data and privacy. I think in this specific case, you named a lot of entities there, and I think it's better to take a lot of them one by one. Telegram is something, by the way, I put in a class of its own and kind of exclude from, you know, the comparison, because I think that's a different beast entirely as well, almost unedited, unmoderated. But I do think that this entity, ByteDance, and by the way, they have a lot of apps. This is obviously the biggest. So they have a lot of other initiatives, everything from influencers to shopping to music, advertising are part of a ByteDance. But I think this one's different than the others, personally.
How is it different?
Well, because it's a state actor that's behind it. And whether the interests are malign or there's competitive aspects or real national security considerations, that state has the ability to, you know, ask for, co-opt, and use user data, American user data. And, you know, our government, CFIUS, which isn't always in the news, right, but which is a congressional committee that looks at foreign investment in our interests in this country and takes a look at security interests, and they have forced the divestment of other apps in the past. There's, there's a gay app called Grindr that was forcibly divested, that, you know, people wanted to make sure that the gay community had privacy and wasn't subject to, you know, foreign interference. I think there was a healthcare app in New England, I want to say, that was forcibly divested. So, it's a very real consideration, whether it's rivalry, national security, espionage, hacking, or all the above. And I do think that it is a legitimate thing for our leaders to look at this thing and say, hey, what's going on here? This is different. Also, if you think about, you know, what happens in Taiwan, if there's an invasion down the road, it could be used as a propaganda tool, you know, for that or for other purposes as well. So that's a really different thing, right, than, say, a publication like the New York Times or Washington Post. It's not controlled by our government. So I think the concern and the actions are actually quite legitimate. I think the real question is, what you're looking at this as a regulator, what do you do to make this thing more effective and get it under control?
Yeah.
Know? What does and, a ban yeah, even you know, look it's, like? It's, well, what does a ban even look like if they enforce this ban?
So it's not a ban. I mean, it's just the media. It's what would actually happen. I mean, they call it deplatforming, meaning that I believe, say, in a certain territory, like the U.S., the main app stores would be forced to cut off support for the app. So over time, it degrades. It might, you know, you need to update it. People can get around it by going through VPNs or going to offshore probably to update the app. So it wouldn't be a perfect thing. But that's I don't think they could ban it per se. I guess they could shut it down. But I think it's more about deplatforming it and cutting off support from the app store, I think. And it usually would have to be, and I'm riffing on all this just to be clear. I don't think anyone's seen the data outside of these, you know, parties as to what's actually happening. But I think this would probably have to happen in some broad, you know, US territory, federal level. It wouldn't be state by state because people use this app on mobile phones and they move between states and territories and mobile phone coverage doesn't really adhere to, you know, state boundaries to my knowledge. So it would be a very, very impractical thing to do for sure. But there have been something called Project Texas, and there's one for Europe. Is it Emerald? I can't remember that. There's one that's based in Ireland that's from the European markets that I believe TikTok and ByteDance have kind of cooked up to put in front of regulators. That is their proposal for here's a constructive solution to resolve this.
Yeah, we've been, you know, as you've been talking about, you know, the concerns of vulnerability to manipulation by Chinese authorities, shaping content that might be difficult to detect. And apparently, it really isn't just the U.S. Apparently, the European Union is also scrutinizing the app's role in some things, including the upcoming Romanian election. So, I mean, it seems like it's going to end up, obviously, in the Supreme Court. And do you think it'll be more of a free speech First Amendment issue for them?
Well, firstly, it's a great point. It isn't, you know, this isn't confined to I think everyone, including Japan's looking at this as well over in Asia. There's a lot of regions that are looking at this and trying to figure out ways to balance it. And it isn't just about China. It's our tech titans too are subject to all these laws. So it's a real balancing act. And, you know, that community is a billion plus strong. And so it's not an easy thing to weigh. It isn't just about free speech. It is about national security. And, I'm not an expert on the Supreme Court, but it might not even go to the Supreme Court, by the way. But I bet if it did, they would look at it pretty holistically and would probably look at it based on what the appeals court is looking at, which is, you know, it's national security. That to me has been the focus of what CFIUS and what, you know, I think the first Trump administration tried to ban it through the Commerce Department, if my memory serves. It's mostly been around the issue of national security and privacy. It isn't so much about free speech. In my opinion.
Well, that's what the appellate court said. You're right. The appellate court said that Congress wrote a law. The law is specific to this instance, and the law is constitutional.
Yeah. And that's the real thing. So I think the real thing, you know, is it'll sort of be how they survive tactically. I mean, I'm pretty neutral on TikTok. I have to say I'm not an expert user in it, but it's hard to experience the app, at least the content side of it, which is closer to the speech issue, and see how there's much of anything strategic on it. It's really, you know, it's not serious content that's on there. I've had people on my team, for example, probing whether we should use it for business, and it's, you know, I don't see it as some terribly substantive tool. It's a fun, I just don't. Come on, look, everyone knows this. But people rely on it. And it's embedded itself in pop culture, particularly for young people. And so I think the balancing act is about if you are going to do something to it, whether you deplatform it or ban it or force an American-owned structure over it, How do you do that so it doesn't ruin the user experience? So you don't tick off all the teens that are using it. It's their medium. It's not my generation. And they're using it. You know, I've seen it just from the posts that I make, just awed by the virality of it and the power of it. And so there is an argument that when Trump comes in, which is the day after the ban is supposed to take effect, right? Is the new administration going to say, hey, let's be pragmatic about this, right? We don't want to tick off 180 million people, 90 million teens. Maybe they'll just override the ban and let them stay in place. So who knows?
Yeah.
Seth, thanks so much for the insight.
My pleasure.
That was Seth Schachner, the managing director of Strat Americas.
You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman with Lori London.
Not a single person wants chemical-laced plastic particles in their bloodstream or their organs or in their unborn babies.
More than 3,300 participants, including delegates from more than 170 countries and representatives of nearly 450 organizations, meeting in Busan, South Korea, ended week-long talks about a plastics ban treaty Monday without reaching an agreement. We get more now from Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer.
While more than 100 nations wanted to cap plastic production, a handful of oil producers were prepared only to target waste. Though meeting chair Luis Vallas Valdivieso tried to sound a positive note.
We have succeeded in many areas. However, there are critical matters still need to be agreed.
The nations have been gathered at the 5th UN Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee in Busan, South Korea. It was intended to yield a legally binding global treaty and was meant to be the last gathering of its kind. However, countries could agree only to postpone key decisions and resume negotiations later on. At the talks, they remain divided on the basic scope of a treaty. The most contentious items include capping plastic production, managing plastic products, and chemicals of concern. Also, the issue of financing to help developing countries implement the treaty. A small number of petrochemical producing nations, such as Saudi Arabia, have strongly opposed efforts to reduce plastic production. They have tried to use procedural tactics to delay negotiations. Even so, Greenpeace Plastics campaign lead Graham Forbes said the meeting wasn't a waste of time.
I think the silver lining is that more than 100 countries representing billions of people stood up for the type of treaty that will reduce plastic production, protect human health, and finance the transition that's going to be desperately needed to address the plastic pollution crisis.
An option proposed by Panama and backed by more than 100 countries would have created a path for a global plastic production reduction target, while another proposal did not include production caps. The fault lines were apparent in a revised document released by the meeting's chair on Sunday, but that document could still form the basis of a treaty later on.
Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer.
So what are the implications of this material that most of us likely encounter in some way or another every single day? What does it mean, not only for the health of our planet, but for our own health?
Lori spoke with Judith Enck, president of Beyond Plastics.
There are so many problems going on in the world, but one of the main existential threats to every single human being and living thing on the planet is the climate crisis and the environmental degradation that's happening. Mm-hmm. And yep. We all know that plastic is a very, very, very big contributor to it. I guess I just want to ask you where things stand. Where is the problem of plastic pollution on the planet right now? What are your biggest concerns?
Well, there's an increased awareness of the problem, and polls show bipartisan support in the United States to drive down plastic pollution. Really encouraging polling. Republicans, Democrats, independents, people want to see less plastic in their lives. But global plastic production has increased sevenfold since 1980, and it's projected to almost double by 2040. None of us voted for more plastic. I don't think anything tastes better in plastics, but because plastic is made from a byproduct of hydrofracking, the cost of plastic to companies is pretty cheap. So big companies like Amazon and McDonald's and Starbucks are addicted to plastics, and the use is just increasing. The United States, by the way, is the largest producer of plastic waste in the universe.
So what you're saying is even though our awareness is increasing, production is also increasing. And what does that mean for the environment?
Well, with the increased production of plastic, first you get immense health damage in communities where the plastics are being made. So that's mostly Louisiana, Texas, and Appalachia. And then we're all affected when we use plastic in our daily lives. Unfortunately, health researchers have identified microplastics and nanoplastics in the human lung, blood, brain, testicles, placenta, and breast milk. We are all breathing in or swallowing a large amount of plastic. And the most concerning report to come out last March in the New England Journal of Medicine documented the presence of plastic in heart arteries. And if you have plastic in arteries heading to your heart, you are five times more likely to suffer from a heart attack or stroke. So the plastics issue has traditionally been viewed as a major problem for the ocean, which it definitely is. Plastics are made from fossil fuels, so there's a climate change connection. But what health researchers are finding about the presence of plastics in the human body is very, very concerning and should be a clarion call for every level of government to commit to reducing the amount of plastic that is produced. Plastics recycling has been an abysmal failure. I'm a big supporter of recycling. Keep recycling your paper, metal, glass, cardboard, compost your yard waste and food waste. But the plastic recycling rate in this country is about 5 to 6%. The plastics industry wants us to just keep using massive amounts of plastic, toss it in the recycling bin, thinking that it gets recycled. But that is not true. Most plastics do not get recycled. They either get landfilled, burned at incinerators, both in environmental justice communities, or they get littered and eventually make their way into the ocean.
So Beyond Plastics Now has released a new report that basically, you are hoping that draws the attention to the next president of the United States. What's the message you're trying to get across to the next administration?
We have some very specific policy recommendations based on reducing the generation and production of plastics. Plastic recycling has been an abysmal failure. We should stop participating in that magical thinking. We need the new president to direct the State Department to improve its position in the international plastics treaty negotiations. We need the new president to support packaging reduction, support legislation in Congress to create a national bottle bill, mandatory deposits on beverage containers. We want a really comprehensive environmental justice approach so that the people living near plastic production facilities have their health protected. We also want the U.S. Labor Department to start working on what's called a just transition. So workers working in the plastics sector are transitioned into different jobs that do not poison the planet, but still give them a living wage paycheck. We are nonpartisan. We want them to take this issue seriously. And, you know, the funny thing about this issue is I've worked on environmental policy for decades. I've met many climate change deniers. I've never met a plastic pollution denier because you see the evidence of the problem everywhere.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure.
That was Judith Enck, president of Beyond Plastics.
And that's all the time we have for this week. On behalf of all of us at VOA, thanks so much for listening.
For more news throughout the week, listen to The Issue podcast on Monday through Friday on your favorite social media app, or you can get it online at voanews.com.
Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.